Hello and welcome to the Leicester Mercury Talking Newspaper for Monday the 21st of January to Saturday, January the 26th. It is produced by Vista, telephone number 0116 249 8839. Items are selected and read by Bev and it is recorded by Dave. Sunrise and sunset times for the week commencing Monday the 21st of January are sunrise 8:03 a.m, sunset 4:28 p.m. And we begin with the headline, Student Dies After Being Hit by Car. A University of Leicester student has died after being knocked down by a car that police were trying to stop. The man, who has not yet been identified, died shortly after being hit as he was walking in Stoughton Drive South in Oadby at 12:30 a.m. on Saturday. Police said they saw a suspect vehicle in the area and tried to get it to stop. The driver made off, and as police were seeking permission from senior officers to begin a pursuit, the suspect's vehicle hit the victim at the crossroads where Stoughton Road South meets Manor Road and Knighton Grange Road. A police spokesman said, shortly after 12:30 a.m. on Saturday, officers became aware of a suspect vehicle in Stoughton Drive South, Oadby. The vehicle failed to stop for police and in making off from the scene was in collision with a pedestrian. Officers stopped to attend to the pedestrian and East Midlands Ambulance Service was also called. However, the pedestrian was pronounced dead a short time later at the scene. Immediate inquiries led police to identify a suspect and a 30-year-old man was arrested on suspicion of drink driving. A mandatory referral has been made to the Independent Office for Police Conduct. Residents in the area said the police helicopter spent an hour in the air helping with the search for the suspect. He was located and arrested on suspicion of drink driving and has subsequently been released on bail. The road was shut for nearly 12 hours as police forensic accident investigators carried out inquiries and other officers visited the numerous student accommodation halls in the area. Flowers have been left at the scene of the incident. A University of Leicester spokesman said, "With great sadness, we can confirm that one of our students died in the incident in Oadby. Our thoughts are with his family and friends at this difficult time. We're working with police and supporting all of those affected. Those affected by the incident have been contacted." Neil O'Brien, the MP for Oadby, said, "This is an incredibly sad and tragic incident, and our thoughts are with the young man's family, his friends, and the university. In general, this is a really nice place for students to live. I hope anyone with any information that could help the police comes forward." Waste company is fined £3,000 for spilling litter from its lorries. A waste company that let litter spill from the back of its vehicles has been fined £3,000. Leicester Scrap Processors and Suppliers Limited, based in South Wigston, was prosecuted by Blaby District Council after two incidents last year. The first happened on May the 31st when litter fell off a lorry on the B5366 north of Counterthorpe. It took four people with two vehicles to clean up the waste, which cost the council an estimated £247. The witness who saw the lorry got in touch with the council's environmental health officers, who worked out that Leicester Scrap Processors and Suppliers Limited were responsible. The second incident happened on June the 21st, when another large amount of waste was seen falling onto the A426 between Whetstone and Lutterworth from one of the company's vehicles. The company was prosecuted for failing in its duty to prevent waste escaping in breach of the Environmental Protection Act 1990. Leicester Scrap Processors and Suppliers appeared at Leicester Magistrates Court on Wednesday, January the 9th, and representatives of the company pleaded guilty to two breaches of the law. It was fined £1,500 for each offence and ordered to compensate Blaby District Council for the £247 it cost to clear up the offence on the B5366. It was also ordered to pay a £170 victim surcharge and £460 towards the council's costs of bringing the prosecution. The £3,877 must be paid within 28 days. Councillor Ian Hewson, portfolio holder for leisure and regulatory services at the council, said, "This is an excellent result for us. Companies must take responsibility for the waste they are handling. We will prosecute if we find companies are leaving waste in our district, whether carelessly or maliciously. We hope the company involved learns from this and makes sure it takes its responsibilities more seriously in future. We urge anyone who witnesses any incident such as this, littering or fly tipping, to report it to us so we can investigate. For more information on how to report waste offences, such as fly tipping, in Blaby District, visit blaby.gov.uk/fly tipping. Okay. Hello, Dolly. Cute dog is prize pet's winner. After 3 months of voting, more than 700 entries and 320,900 votes cast by Leicester Mercury readers, we can today announce the winner of this year's prize pets competition. Bichon Frise Dolly from Oadby is officially Leicestershire's cutest pet for 2019, soaring to the top spot with 40,650 votes. Owner Britt Wyatt, 29, said, "Winning the contest was a complete shock. I got an email stating that Dolly had won," she said. "I was with my partner Tom at the time, and we started dancing around the room with joy. We looked at Dolly and we told her, and she looked back with so much sass. Everyone who meets her tells us she is the nicest dog they've met, and that she is quite human-like. She's very friendly and very well behaved, but she has definitely got this attitude. Sometimes I wonder if I really own her, or if it's the other way around." In recent years, entries to the competition have included dogs, cats, hamsters, horses, lizards, owls, snakes, and even tarantulas. Last year, the top three were all cats, but it was a complete turnaround this year, with the top three all being dogs. The runner-up was Archie Blue, a Cavalier King Charles belonging to Paula Tiernan from Ratby. "It's really nice to get this prize because Archie is also a therapy dog, so he does a lot of good in the community and is almost recognised for it," said Paula. Third place went to Luna, a cockapoo belonging to Steph Smith from Huggleskirt. She said, "Well, obviously she should have come first, as she's definitely the most beautiful pooch ever, but I'm so happy she came third, and thank you to everyone who voted for her." The winning pet's owner receives a £200 prize, while second and third place were given £100 and £50 respectively. Living in fear after spate. A group of South Asians in Leicester are living in fear after a series of terrifying robberies in which children have had screwdrivers held to their throats, forcing parents to hand over gold and cash. In a 12-month spell, 17 families, members of Leicester's 500-strong Kerala community, have been targeted. Three have suffered frightening aggravated burglaries involving up to five men. In February last year, a six-year-old girl was held with a screwdriver at her throat downstairs while her father was beaten into handing over the family's gold upstairs. Her plea to the robbers, "not to hurt my dad," fell on deaf ears as they beat him and threatened to chop off his finger to get his wedding ring. In August, a nine-year-old boy had a gold chain ripped from his neck in his home while being threatened with a screwdriver. In a third home invasion in November, a teenager alone in the house was attacked and again threatened with a screwdriver before a gang of up to five men got away with thousands of pounds of gold. No one has been arrested in connection with the aggravated burglaries, despite good quality CCTV images provided to the police from the November robbery. The community said investigations into a further 14 burglaries at homes have also not been detected. All the robberies took place in parts of the city near hospitals, to where members of the Christian, largely Catholic, community emigrated in response to former Tony Blair's drive to recruit more nurses. The fear among the community prompted a meeting with police and a Leicester City Council community safety representative at the Mother of God Church in New Parks, Leicester, just before Christmas. Telsman Thomas, secretary of the Leicester Kerala community, is to meet police and Crime Commissioner Lord Willie Back later this month about the situation. He said, "It has really hit community confidence. We're very worried about these burglaries, where families and their kids are attacked." Our children are panicking and worried about staying at home at night. They can't leave mum or dad. We've lost faith in the police and criminal justice system. The trauma caused by these events affects our daily life and is causing sleepless nights. Our children are having nightmares, and these incidents have affected their studies. These atrocious incidents are a threat to peaceful life. There have been 17 cases in the past 10 months. It's affecting everyone. The burglars come into homes and hit and punch people. One of the main reasons they're targeting people is for their gold. The police say they haven't got enough evidence and after a couple of weeks close the case. The Kerala community is well integrated within the city and many live close to the hospitals where they work. We are law-abiding and don't create problems. We know the police are suffering a lot, but we want a peaceful life. We pay our taxes and council tax, but they're not doing their job 100% for us. Gold is seen as a status symbol among Kerala and other South Asian groups, as well as a good financial hedge against inflation. Inspector Jim Smallman said, "Officers attended, in partnership with Leicester City Council, a community meeting last month to discuss concerns raised about burglaries which have occurred in the West Leicester area. After concerns were raised at the meeting about three specific aggravated burglaries which happened in February, August and November last year, officers reviewed the investigations. A review showed that at the time all three crimes were investigated thoroughly, that all viable lines of inquiries had been exhausted and all victims had been updated. If any new information is received which can assist officers, this will be investigated. Reassurance was given by those officers present that this type of crime is taken seriously by the force and we are keen to work with the community. Work is ongoing to set up a community representatives group with specific contacts to work alongside residents and address concerns. Since the meeting on December the 7th, officers have been carrying out patrols and officers are aware to be vigilant to this latest series of burglaries. We will continue to work closely with our partner agencies, remaining committed to tackling crime in the West Leicester area. Woman stole from mum 94 to feed drug habit. A woman stole more than £61,000 from her 94-year-old mother to fund a £600-a-week cocaine habit. Dawn Weeks became carer for her mother as the pensioner was suffering from dementia. Other members of the family agreed Weeks could have access to her mum's bank account and pay herself £4,800 a year. But Weeks fraudulently obtained access to her mother's separate TSB savings account, which included a large amount of money from the sale of her bungalow. Within 11 months, Weeks had emptied the savings account of all but £2.17 and had left her current account £41 in debt. In total, she stole £61,133. Her spending came to light after Weeks' partner noticed all the couple's money in a joint account had disappeared. When he confronted her in May 2017, Weeks ran away from home and was reported missing to the police. While she was missing, her brother took her mother to her bank, where staff broke the news her accounts had been emptied. When Weeks, 54, formerly of North Dean Road, West Knighton, Leicester, turned up again 2 days later, she was arrested and admitted taking the money. She pleaded guilty to a charge of fraud at Leicester Magistrates Court and was sent to the Crown Court for sentencing. At the Crown Court, recorder Bernard Thorogood decided Weeks had led such a positive life before the thefts, she should not go to jail. He said she had been put under a lot of pressure. He said, "Let nobody be in any doubt this was a disgraceful and long-standing course of conduct of which I'm sure you feel deeply ashamed. You breached the trust of your 94-year-old mother, and that sort of conduct crosses the custodial threshold. But you have reached 54 years of age with good character. I'm perfectly satisfied you were under pressure, to which she reacted in the wrong way." She was given a 16-month jail sentence, suspended for 18 months, during which she will have to carry out 180 hours of unpaid work and take part in 20 days of rehabilitation. Weeks' barrister, Michael Garvey, had told the court Weeks had not been well supported by the family after taking on the caring role and had turned to drugs to cope with the stress. He said, she was in full-time work and the decision was made by the family that their mother needed some care. The family were determined she should not be put into a care home. My client felt very much the expectation was on her, and she found that a great strain. She felt she couldn't cope. She would say she is not naturally a carer. It was putting a great emotional strain on her, which is why she turned to substance misuse, and that led to the need for funds, and there was an open door to a bank account. The court heard the victim's bank, TSB, had repaid her the full sum that was taken.
Hello.
Police plea to help find drug-dealing youngsters. Police have urged members of the public to help them identify young people who have been drawn into drug dealing. Crime gangs are moving youngsters into and out of the city and county to sell drugs for them, Leicester police said. The practice of exploiting young people is known as county lines. Victims are offered inducements such as cash and clothing to become involved in street dealing. They're kept in line through intimidation and violence, police say. They may be forced to carry out other crimes, including robbery or assault, or to store money and firearms. In some cases, they are sent into the homes of vulnerable adults or drug addicts and use the property as a base to sell drugs, a practice known as cuckooing. Deputy Chief Constable Rob Nixon said, County lines is a current but rapidly growing issue across the country. Here in Leicester, Leicestershire and Rutland, we're working with our partners to identify those who are being exploited, along with the criminals responsible, so we can bring them to justice. By raising awareness of the signs to look out for, we hope the public can help us be the eyes and ears within their communities to protect others from this controlling and extremely damaging activity. Among our priorities is to safeguard people from getting drawn into criminality in the first place. Signs to look out for, which could mean a child or vulnerable adult is being exploited, include repeatedly missing from home or school and decline in academic performance, maybe carrying a weapon, gang association or isolation from peers or social networks, unexplained relationships with new or older people. Signs to look out for, which could mean the person is a victim of cuckooing, include signs of drug use, decline in general well-being, increase in people or vehicles visiting their home, an increase in antisocial behaviour in the area. Superintendent Shane O'Neill, who leads the force's Serious Harm Reduction Unit, said, everyone can help by learning the signs and reporting any concerns they have, either to ourselves, local authority, or Crime Stoppers anonymously. Everyone should feel a responsibility to look after their communities to protect children and vulnerable people. This type of serious organised criminality is not acceptable, and we will take robust action against offenders. Councillor Ivan Old, Leicestershire County Council's Cabinet Member for Children and Families, said, the sad fact is children and young people are being targeted and exploited. We can all play a part by sharing our concerns and preventing a child from becoming forced into a life of crime. Emergency stop ordeal on bus for passenger. Two elderly bus passengers were injured when they were catapulted forward as the driver was forced to make an emergency stop. The single-decker bus was brought to a juddering halt when a woman stepped out in front of it. The injured passengers, a man and woman, were treated at Leicester Royal Infirmary after the incident on the Arriva No. 6 service from the city's Haymarket bus station to Thurmaston on Thursday afternoon last week. Josie Webb, 79, who was returning to her Thurmaston home with a trolley load of shopping, said, I was suddenly catapulted to the front of the bus. An elderly man on a side seat in front of me bumped his head on a handrail before ending up on top of me. If I hadn't had my trolley, which was dragging me back, my head would have hit the front of the bus and I could have been more seriously injured. Mrs. Webb, who needs blood thinning medication, needed stitches in a wrist wound. Traffic was held up by about an hour on the busy Melton Road outside former cinema, the Coliseum, while Mrs. Webb was made to lay still on the floor of the bus awaiting the arrival of paramedics. She and the man were taken to hospital in separate ambulances. Mrs. Webb said, "I stayed on the floor for 45 minutes before the paramedics arrived. The road was completely blocked, and an inspector on the bus had to get off and help sort the traffic out. I didn't see the woman step off the pavement in front of the bus. I was told by the female driver, who was very shaken. Thank goodness she was able to stop in time." Mrs. Webb pleaded with the pedestrian in a letter published in the Leicester Mercury's mailbox, "Please do not do this again, or it could be you in the morgue. You are a very lucky woman. The driver did a great job in stopping this bus, and I was told you didn't even wait to see what you had caused. Mrs. Webb feels there should be seatbelts on seats like the one on which she was sitting, which had nothing in front of it to prevent someone from falling out. She said, if I had been restrained, I wouldn't have fallen out of the seat. You have to wear a seatbelt on coaches. I sat there so I had room for my shopping trolley." Lindsay Frostick, general manager at Arriva Thermiston, said, "The manner in which our driver responded to the incident, calling the emergency services, supporting those affected in the best way she could in this difficult situation, exemplifies the standards we would expect of our team. We will now be assessing the CCTV and working with the driver concerned to establish the circumstances surrounding these events. We send both passengers affected our very best wishes. Under the most recent legislation, buses that are designed for urban use with standing passengers are exempt from laws regarding the installation of seatbelts. The Department of Transport states that this is because these types of vehicles are typically used for short journeys in both time and distance, undertaken at moderate speeds on urban routes." School set to close at end of academic year. A school is set to close at the end of the year because of falling pupil numbers. Parents of children studying at Sir Frank Whittle Studio School in Lutterworth received an email saying the Secretary of State for Education has granted a decision in principle to close. The notice also appears on the school's website. One parent said, "I'm not at all shocked by the news. Days before the new academic year, we received an email saying the head teacher and the deputy head had left the school. I think it's disgusting. These are young people with their own minds who are perfectly capable of listening to serious news like this. The pupils are all very distressed by it all." The Bitterswell Road School has capacity for 300 students aged from 14 to 19. It currently has 90. The letter stated that a four-week listening period had started, during which individuals and organisations can put forward their views on the proposed closure. The school is run by Lutterworth Academies Trust. The letter said, "The Sir Frank Whittle Studio School was opened in September 2014 and has, despite considerable effort, found the recruitment of students challenging. This lack of demand has led to the situation where the school is not financially viable or educationally sustainable going forward. The Trust has reviewed several options to keep the Sir Frank Whittle Studio School open, but none is likely to be achievable within the educational landscape, and therefore it has been reluctantly agreed to apply for closure. The studio school model means pupils spend 4 days a week in lessons and 1 day on a work placement." The parent said, "It's a massive experiment that has gone badly wrong. The idea in theory is fantastic, but it just hasn't been executed very well." If the request is given formal approval, the school will close at the end of the school year 2018-19. The school said the decision to close was a very difficult one. However, the Lutterworth Academies Trust has a responsibility to ensure it undertakes a sensible and sustainable course of action that enables the Trust to safeguard its continuing success in the future. Consequently, with the levels of students at the studio school being so low, the decision to close has become necessary. It is not expected there will be any staff redundancies because of the closure, as staff can be redeployed elsewhere within the Trust. The Trust said it would do everything it can to support students through the unsettling period. The curriculum, work experience and coaching will remain in place during the 2019-20 academic year to allow all current students of the school to complete their courses and qualifications with Lutterworth College. School in lockdown over armed gang fears. Pupils were locked inside their classrooms at a county school after a gang of youths reportedly carrying knives got into the school grounds. Police were called to Reek Valley Academy in Syston at 2:45 p.m. on Monday after reports of a group of young people on school grounds. It is understood because of the school's quick lockdown procedures, the group did not gain access to the building. A police spokeswoman said yesterday, "Officers are investigating following a public order incident at Reek Valley Community College in Syston. Police were called to the scene at 2:45 p.m. on Monday after it was reported a number of young people had entered the school premises with knives. One teenager is believed to have been hit in the face, causing bruising to his eye. When officers arrived, the group had left the area. A 16-year-old boy was subsequently arrested for a fray and possession with intent to supply a Class B drug and has been released pending further investigation. Officers are currently conducting inquiries in relation to the incident and providing reassurance to the staff and students at the school. A single police car was parked on the corner of Parkstone Road and Clumber Crescent as students left the school yesterday. Principal Tony Pinnock told the Mercury yesterday that absolutely categorically no knives were involved. Mr. Pinnock added that parents had been told what happened and no public comment was being released until he had spoken to the school's chair of governors. One teenager is believed to have been left with bruising to his eye after being hit. The incident first came to light when details were posted on various Facebook pages. One posted, "Students were locked into classrooms for their own safety. Police and staff defused the situation very quickly and safely. Well done to the school for putting our children's safety first. They were asked not to go on their phones as this would have caused unnecessary panic in parents. Yesterday, anxious parents waiting to collect their children spoke of a group varying in number from 9 to 15 who ran off along Clumber Crescent before police arrived. One said, I was told a group of older boys managed to get into the grounds. One of my daughters is at home today because she was too upset to come to school. She was inside one of the classrooms and could hear a lot of kerfuffle outside. I saw a group of lads running away. There was loads of them, about 15. Some had got hoodies on and others were wearing balaclavas covering their faces. There was a big police presence and I think the school did everything it could in the circumstances. It's made me wonder why the school gates of secondary schools, not just Reek, are left open. That doesn't happen in primary schools. A father there to meet his 15-year-old son, something he said he wouldn't normally do, told us, my son said he saw these lads hit some lad. I came to fetch him last night. Another parent said, my daughter texted me to say she had to stay behind and she would tell me about it in the car. I found out later kids were being told not to ring their parents to tell them what was happening, and that's wrong. We should have been told. Reek Valley Academy has pupils aged 11 to 18 through Key Stage 3 and 4, along with the Sixth Form Centre. Concerns over GP practice. A patient being given the wrong vaccination, another being sent the wrong letter, and a used needle found outside are some of the things inspectors found evidence of when they reviewed the care given at a city GP practice. Care Quality Commission inspectors visited both of the Saffron Health sites in Saffron Lane, were visited as part of an inspection in October and November last year. The overall service was rated as requires improvement, but when assessing whether the service provided was safe, inspectors recorded an inadequate rating. A 7-strong team of QCQ inspectors and advisers visited the practice. Their findings were presented in a report published this month. Concerns highlighted by inspectors included evidence that vulnerable patients who were at risk of harm had not been identified and recorded. The monitoring of some patients on medication was another issue raised, and there were also concerns that safeguarding policy was not being applied in some instances. Inspectors identified 6 patients at risk of falling pregnant who were being prescribed a drug that can cause serious developmental problems in the unborn child. There was evidence of patients being prescribed medications without the appropriate monitoring tests being completed or recorded. One example was 216 patients taking medicines for blood pressure who had not had their renal function monitored within appropriate timescales. Some patients who were taking the blood-thinning drug warfarin had not had relevant checks for 3 months. The report said, "The practice system for ensuring patients requiring monitoring while taking high-risk medicines was not always effective. We found evidence of housebound patients who were receiving a medicine that required close monitoring. There was no evidence of this monitoring on the clinical system to indicate it remained safe to continue the medicine for several months. We saw occasions where the read code stating medication review done was being added to patient records without evidence of patients being actively reviewed. An electrical report completed in January 2017 identified 9 items that needed urgent action. Inspectors found no evidence the work had been done. After the inspection, the practice said it had documentation saying no immediate action needed to be taken. Minor procedures and consultations were being carried out in carpeted rooms. When inspectors pointed this out to surgery staff, appointments were rearranged to take place in appropriate rooms. Practice staff were praised, however, for treating patients with kindness, respect, and compassion. The inspectors said that feedback from patients was positive and that patient survey results were above local and national averages for questions relating to kindness, respect, and compassion. A spokesman for the practice said, "We are disappointed with the findings of the report." Since the CQC's visit, the practice team has been working hard to address the issues that CQC identified. We are working to ensure our services meet CQC expectations on safety. We're pleased it acknowledges aspects of care we are good at, such as being a caring practice and responsive to patient needs. A great loss for Sikh community and for Leicester. Tributes have been paid to a respected Sikh community leader and volunteer who dedicated his life to the people of Leicester. Sua Singh Paldi's passing is being mourned as a great loss for the Sikh community of Leicester and the city as a whole. A former president of two of the largest Sikh temples in the city, he died in Leicester Royal Infirmary last Thursday, age 84. He leaves behind his wife, Daljit Kaur, their 4 children and 7 grandchildren. Parminder Thandi, 26, said she couldn't be prouder of her grandfather who lived in Groby Road. She said he was a prominent Sikh leader within Leicester and well known throughout the whole community through his involvement in multi-faith groups. My grandfather arrived in Leicester from the Punjab, India in 1963 and was president of Guru Tegh Bahadur Gurdwara in East Park Road, Evington for many years. In 1992, he became president at Guru Amar Das Gurdwara in Clarendon Park Road and last year was appointed its chairman. Mr. Singh Paldi was a volunteer at the city's Loras Hospice for more than 15 years and was awarded the city's Honoured Citizen Award in 2008 by the then Lord Mayor of Leicester and was also invited to the Queen's Garden Party at Buckingham Palace in recognition of his community work. Parminder said, "He regularly travelled to Punjab to provide the elderly and needy with eye cataract operations. He also helped poor school children with their education by providing them with learning materials. I was really close to my grandfather. He was a very strong and proud man. He was very caring and a leader who was trustworthy and respected as a man of his word. All his life he was dedicated to the service of others. His name, Sua, means selfless service and he certainly lived up to his name." Mr. Singh Paldi, who had been ill for some time, will also be remembered by his family and friends as a passionate Leicester City supporter. Parminder said he loved Leicester City and was a huge football fan and sport fan. He loved the Indian game, Kabaddi, too. In fact, a few weeks ago, doctors called to warn us that he wasn't going to make it and we should come and say our last goodbyes. My grandfather had been asleep and the concern was he wouldn't wake up. Well, just before City were due to play Newport in the FA Cup, he woke up and we all ended up watching the game together on his iPad. It was funny, but very touching too. She added, "He's going to be dearly missed by all his family and friends and the wider Sikh community." Piara Sinclair, Deputy City Mayor, was a close friend. He said, I was really shocked to learn of Sue's death. It is a great loss for the Sikh community of Leicester and the city as a whole. He lived three doors down from me for nearly 21 years and was a great example and role model. Sue was the person everyone would turn to for sound advice, and he will be really sadly missed. Resham Singh Sandhu, chairman of the Sikh Welfare and Cultural Society, said, "Sue became very much a guide and valued advisor to so many people. He was a stalwart of the community for more than 50 years. Mr. Singh Paldi's funeral will be held on Friday, where, in Sikh tradition, his body will lie on show at the Guru Amar Das Gurdwara in Clarendon Park Road from 11 a.m. to 11:45 a.m. Customers hit by plan to axe bank branches. Five local branches of Santander will shut over the next few months, causing shock and sadness among their customers. The bank, formerly Alliance and Leicester, announced it was shutting 140 branches nationwide after a 23% fall in the number of customers in the past 3 years. A total of 1,270 jobs are at risk, and the closures will reduce the number of UK branches to 614. The Leicestershire and Rutland branches closing are in Loughborough Road, Birstall, Beaver Road, Colville, Evington Road and Uppingham Road, Leicester, and Marketplace, Oakham. Amber Palmer, 64, of Evington, is awaiting two knee operations and uses a crutch, making her worried about getting a bus to the city centre after the Evington Road branch in Leicester closes on June the 13th. She said, "I don't know what they expect people like me to do. This branch here is so easy for me. I don't do online banking. I'm not educated that much. I've been coming here for years, and now it's the only bank there is near us. The Santander in Melbourne Road was even more handy for me, but that's been shut already." Shopna Begum, 42, walks to the Evington Road branch from her home in Highfields, Leicester. She said, "All the banks around me, NatWest, Halifax and everywhere, have gone recently. We don't want this branch to close as well. I don't know why they're closing all the banks when lots of us don't use online." Atika Rahman, 43, of Evington, thinks the nearest branch for him will be the one by the clock tower in the city centre after his branch closes down. He said, "I'm not happy about it. I don't want to go further, and it will be difficult for a lot of people." At the Uppingham Road branch, customers were equally dismayed. Their branch will shut in early May. Winifred Hodgson, 74, from Netherhall, who drives to the bank with husband Keith at least once a week, said, "I'm very sad it's closing. I have no idea where we'll go instead. The nearest will probably be out in Syston for us. We live in Netherhall, and there's nothing up there. We joined this one when it was Alliance and Leicester, and it's a good bank with nice staff. It's very upsetting." Keith, 81, said, "Shopping streets like this one are changing a lot. It's very sad." Iqbal Musa, 53, said, "I just saw the notice at the branch and I'm shocked. Why are they closing all the branches? There used to be loads of banks outside the city centre, but that's changed. It's not good for me. I could go to town, but then I've got to find a parking space, and it's harder than around here and takes more time. I come here twice a week and they're nice staff." More cameras coming your way. A new set of average speed cameras is to be switched on in the next few days. Leicestershire County Council says it will soon begin enforcement with the sixth of a set of cameras set up in recent months as part of a £500,000 year-long pilot scheme to try to persuade drivers to observe speed limits. Cameras in Measham, Walcott, Sharnford, Groby and Oadby have caught nearly 10,000 speeders since they were activated in September and November. The latest cameras to join the trial will be in Beacon Road near Woodhouse Eaves. The County Council has, however, said the cameras will only enforce the limits at certain times according to random phasing. It says it wants to be proportional in the number of fines issued. Officials say even when the cameras are not issuing £100 penalties, they're still collecting data on speeding traffic as well as acting as a deterrent. County Hall says it is the first authority in the country to put cameras at community concern sites, where residents have raised worries about speeding. Cameras are usually placed only at spots where there is a history of injuries and fatalities. Cabinet Member for Environment and Transport Councillor Blake Payne said, "The objective of the trial is to act as a deterrent and prevent speeding rather than to catch motorists exceeding the speed limit. We want to help communities clear the blight of speeding motorists." A further set of cameras at Freeby near Melton will be turned on in the near future. The council decided to install the cameras, hoping to persuade the government to allow it to keep the first £500,000 to cover the cost of setting them up. Fines currently go directly to the Treasury, and Whitehall has so far refused to change the rules to allow any of the money to be retained locally. Council leader, Councillor Nick Rushton, is to meet Treasury Secretary Robert Jenrick to press the case. Liberal Democrat County Councillor Bill Bolter said a year after outlining its plans, the council seemed no closer to getting its hands on any of the fines money. Deputy Council Leader Councillor Byron Rhodes said, "We think at this stage they have misunderstood what we are trying to do. The general policy of the Treasury is not to hypothecate the revenues from fine income. We're trying to devote part of the income in the first year to meet the capital costs of installing them. We haven't given up." City's 195-year-old pie shop closes its doors for the last time. Walker & Son has closed the doors of its city centre pie shop for the last time. The award-winning Walker shop in Leicester's Cheapside has been trading for nearly 200 years and was a Leicester institution. Now the shop has been permanently closed up and its signage removed, with lettering from years gone by now visible underneath. Back in October, Walker & Son confirmed that the shop would be closing, although it did not specify when. About 10 members of staff who worked at the shop were told that their jobs were at risk. The company, which is owned by local food manufacturer Samworth Brothers, says it's working with affected colleagues to identify alternative roles for them where possible. A spokesman for Walker & Son previously told the Leicester Mercury that, despite their best efforts, the shop was no longer commercially viable. They also confirmed that it had suffered a decline in footfall over the past few years. In their latest statement, the company confirmed that the store had closed on January the 18th and thanked staff for their hard work over the years. "We'd like to thank our staff for their hard work and dedication to the business over the years, and we have been working with affected colleagues to identify alternative roles for them in the business where possible," the spokesman commented. Consumers can buy our Walker's fluted pork pie on most retailer deli counters. The Walker's Pie Shop first opened as a butcher's near the market in 1824. It was known for its huge queues on Christmas Eve morning, when shoppers would head out to purchase their pork pies for Christmas breakfast. Work on 125 Home Estate to begin soon. Work on an estate of 125 houses near Sapcut will begin in the next few months. 10 acres of farmland south of Hinckley Road will be turned into 125 one- to four-bedroom homes, which will be on the market from September 2019. Plans lodged with Blaby District Council said that a quarter of the houses will be affordable homes, including some rented properties. Vehicles will access the site using a new T-junction to be built on Hinckley Road, which will include a parallel 2-metre-wide footpath. An outline planning application was approved in April 2018, subject to certain conditions. Hallam Land Management brought forward the proposals, but Miller Homes bought the land and will be building the development after a deal arranged by land agents Matha Jamie. Alistair Parsons, Area Sales Director at Miller Homes, said, "We pride ourselves in building the homes to the highest possible standard in the best locations possible. We are absolutely delighted to be working alongside Matha Jamie, and we can't wait to start working in Sapcut, creating another thriving community for residents of Leicestershire." Gary Kirk, Assistant Director of Matha Jamie, said, "Following a hotly contested tender process, we worked on behalf of our client to agree a deal with established house builders Miller Homes, who have over 80 years' experience in bringing new homes to locations around the UK. A public consultation event for the plans was held in Sapcot in December 2016. Sapcot Parish Council objected to the plans in 2017, saying the village's facilities and traffic network could not cope with the increase in demand the development would bring. Angel. A woman who donated her kidney to her desperately ill partner says today, "When you love the bones of someone, it's what you do." Jackie Gamble and David North were admitted to Leicester General Hospital on Boxing Day and emerged, he with three kidneys and her with one, a week later. The couple are working their way back to full fitness together at their home in Birstall. Jackie, 55, said, "It's 4 weeks on from the operation now and I'm doing okay. We're both getting better every day." Dave, 53, said, "I still find it hard to put into words what Jackie has done for me." Looking back at his illness, Dave can't quite put his finger on when it happened, but he remembers his general health began to slide a couple of years ago. His weight ballooned, he had less energy, and he was having trouble with his breathing. Concerned and a little confused, the couple made an appointment with their doctor, and a number of tests were carried out until it became clear Dave's kidneys had failed. "They told me I would be dead within 24 hours if I didn't have dialysis," he said. The wait for a donor, living or dead, was underway. In the meantime, he needed to be hooked up to a dialysis machine for several hours 3 days a week. During one of their early meetings with his consultant, the discussion turned to transplantation and the possibility of there being a donor out there somewhere. "Patients can receive organs from the dead, relatives, or in some cases from living strangers," the doctor explained. Jackie said, "I just said, I'll do it. And I had no reservations about doing it either." Dave said, "I told her you don't have to put yourself through this, but she was determined to do it. A friend said, she's an angel who came for Christmas, and I couldn't put it better than that." Before the operation could go ahead, Jackie had a series of scans and tests to be sure she was in sufficiently good health to sacrifice one of her kidneys and that Dave's body would accept it. He said, "They told us the best possible match is a twin, and then a family member, because it's the same bloodline. Obviously, we're not related, so we had no idea what the chances of it working out would be." After several months of examinations, there was a phone call from the hospital. Jackie remembers. They said, "How about December the 19th or the 27th? And I said, "What, more tests?" They replied, "No, it's time for the transplant." The couple, who have been together for 6 years, were admitted to the general on Boxing Day. Jackie, who picked up shingles while she was in hospital, said, "We were both in surgery for 2 hours. The consultant said they were textbook operations. I was in a lot of pain because of the operation and the shingles. I couldn't get out of my bed in the hospital for the first few days, and he was up and about walking around. But things have got better quickly, and we're at home now building up our strength. The people who have helped us along the way, particularly the people on Ward 17 at the General, have been brilliant. They've made sure everything was absolutely right for both me and Dave every step of the way. If anyone is thinking about doing it, I would say yes. It can be scary at times, but it's the most wonderful thing you can do for someone, whether it's your partner, a member of your family, or a stranger. Our families and friends have been really supportive. One sent us a Christmas card with the message, 'To the only couple I know who shared a body part.' At the moment, David is taking 30 tablets every morning and 15 in the afternoon to prevent his system rejecting his new kidney. The heavy dosage will reduce, but he will be taking tablets for the rest of his life. He said, it's a small price to pay. Both have to make regular trips back to the general, but the frequency of these visits will also reduce in the coming weeks and months. Ambulance car damaged. Vandals attacked an ambulance service vehicle while paramedics were dealing with an emergency nearby. In a statement, North West Leicestershire Police said, police have launched an investigation after a fast response vehicle belonging to East Midlands Ambulance Service was damaged. The car, a Skoda Octavia, was damaged while staff responded to an incident in Market Street, Ashby. It's believed the vehicle was damaged sometime between 2:20 a.m. and 3:45 a.m. on Friday, January the 19th. The bonnet of the car was scratched and the front offside door was dented. Anyone with information about the incident should contact police on 101. Hospitals issue bug plea. People with highly contagious neurovirus stomach flu are being advised to stay away from hospitals and GP surgeries to prevent the illness spreading. Staff at University Hospitals of Leicester NHS Trust are urging visitors not to turn up if they have the winter vomiting bug. Norovirus affects up to 1 million people in the UK every year, with about 10,000 cases in Leicestershire and Rutland. An outbreak of the bug has been confirmed at a ward in Leicester Royal Infirmary. Dr. David Jenkins, a microbiologist at the Trust, said, "Norovirus is highly contagious and can be picked up easily by ill and vulnerable people. We have confirmed cases on one of our wards at the infirmary and have taken extra measures to contain it and prevent wider spread. Symptoms of norovirus include diarrhoea, vomiting and fever. Norovirus can be a nasty experience for those affected, but is normally a short-lived, self-limiting infection from which people will usually recover within 12 to 48 hours," said Dr. Jenkins. "It's really important that if you are ill or have been recently ill, you don't visit friends or relatives in hospital until you have been free of symptoms for at least 48 hours. The Trust has issued advice for people with the illness. Do not visit your GP surgery or A&E. Norovirus infection is a self-limiting illness and you will recover naturally without treatment. It is, however, important to drink plenty of water to replace lost fluids. If your symptoms persist, phone NHS 111 for advice. Do not visit friends or relatives in hospital or residential care homes, as there is a real risk you would introduce the infection to the establishment. Stay away until you have been free of symptoms for at least 48 hours. Do not send children to school or childcare until they have been free of symptoms for at least 48 hours. Wash your hands thoroughly and regularly at all times, but particularly after toilet visits and before eating. Do not handle or prepare food for other people until you have been symptom-free for 48 hours. Dr. Jenkins said, "In the vast majority of cases, there is no benefit to someone with norovirus being in hospital. People with the condition should stay at home, ensure their personal hygiene is good, particularly hand washing, and avoid contact with others where possible. However, the elderly and very young can sometimes get more severe infection or become dehydrated. If that should be the case, they or their family, friends or carers should telephone their GP service or NHS 111 for advice." Woman's sacking exposes security lapses at airport. Passengers flying from East Midlands Airport have been put at risk by a failure to adequately check hand luggage, a tribunal has heard. The hearing was told how security staff at the Castle Donington Airport were not thorough enough in their bag checks. The issue was brought to light after a mid-air alert, an incident considered so serious that the pilot considered an emergency landing. He was warned that an oversized bottle of liquid had been discovered on his plane. He was told the vessel could contain an explosive or something like that, and was asked if an emergency landing was necessary. Nottingham Employment Tribunal was told if the landing had taken place, the Castle Donington Airport's reputation would have been damaged. Security officer Mrs. K. Singh, a bag searcher, was sacked for gross misconduct following the scare. But Mrs. Singh, who made legal claims for unfair dismissal and race discrimination, believed she was being singled out. She told the hearing that 21 colleagues had also failed to carry out adequate luggage checks over a number of years. She said that was because of an X-ray machine glitch. It sometimes rejected bags even though nothing suspicious had been picked up by the X-ray operator. In those incidents, and with no image of a suspect item sent to them, there was an unwritten rule among bag searchers that the hand luggage was given back without its contents being thoroughly examined, Mrs. Singh said. That is a clear breach of security procedure, but her tribunal claim was supported by all 21 colleagues. Judge Christopher Camp voiced surprise over the show of solidarity, adding that he and his tribunal colleagues had never before encountered a situation where so many people were prepared to sign what amounts to be a confession of gross misconduct. "It is unprecedented in our experience," he said. Mrs. Singh had allowed a liquid bottle to go through security without a proper check between 5:55 a.m. and 6:08 a.m. on August the 20th last year. She was the bag searcher, with the X-ray machine operator sitting with his back to her. No image had appeared on the bag searching viewer, and the luggage was returned to the passenger as if it had been cleared. But it had not been re-screened or hand-searched. The tribunal was told. Following takeoff, airport management were told Mrs. Singh might not have searched a passenger's hand luggage properly. 11 allegations involving 11 items were made against her. Judge Camp rejected the claim for race discrimination but ruled that she had, indeed, been unfairly dismissed. The airport had failed to carry out a proper investigation. There was a fundamental failure on the respondent's part to engage with claimant's defence to the main charge against her, a defence to the effect that her colleagues had been doing exactly the same as her, he said. The evidence to support that defence was very strong. Material presented to us on the point, the respondents, hardly, if at all, had looked into it. We are not entirely sure why this was the case, but our strong suspicion is that, perhaps unconsciously, the respondents did not want to find out an uncomfortable truth that the claimant and at least 20-odd colleagues had for years not been following the proper procedures, and that had never been picked up. The amount of compensation for Mrs. Singh, or if she gets her job back, will be decided next month. Mrs. Singh, who was suspended the following day, told an internal investigatory meeting, "When the machine kicks off bags and not the operator, we give the bag back to the passenger. That's what everyone does." It was, she insisted, an unwritten rule among colleagues. The airport strongly rejected this and stated the 21 workers who signed the letter were lying in a bid to get her off the hook, but that was dismissed as fanciful by Judge Camp. He said, "There is nothing inherently implausible about one or two colleagues being prepared to lie to their employer to get the claimant out of trouble. But for 21 of them to be prepared to do so is another matter entirely. The idea that 21 people would lie to help a colleague appears fanciful when we bear in mind that the lie was to the effect that those 21 routinely did something that the respondent, airport, deemed gross misconduct and that the respondent has just sacked the claimant for."
And now for some nostalgia. 25 years today since Lewis's closed doors. Today marks a quarter of a century since the much-loved Leicester department store Lewis's closed its Humberston Gate premises. We were reminded of the milestone anniversary by reader and former employee Robert Moore of Leicester, who said, "Today it will be 25 years since Lewis's in Humberston Gate closed its doors for the last time. It is still missed by many, especially at Christmas time, for the festive window displays and Santa's grotto. It's good to look up and see the iconic tower still standing as a reminder of a much-loved department store." Robert worked in the store's book department from 1969 until it closed. He said, "Lewis's, with its famous Art Deco building, opened on Saturday, March the 21st, 1936. One of the main attractions on the first day was donkey rides for children on the roof. It was great for shoppers because it sold everything from a thimble to a greenhouse and was noted for good quality. The restaurant on the top floor was famous for being modelled after a restaurant on the Queen Mary liner with porthole windows. There was also a hair salon, bank, travel agent and pet's corner. Some of the smaller animals and birds would be taken home by staff to be looked after over the weekend." The late Bill Maynard worked for a while in the basement kitchen department. But it's the Christmas season that everyone particularly remembers. Lewis's was the epitome of the festive spirit. Staff responsible for the store's large displays would start planning in January for the next Christmas, and the windows were fantastic. Thousands will remember visiting Santa in his magical grotto. Father Christmas would arrive in a blaze of glory in late October, and one year he climbed the famous tower amid laser beams. The food hall was always busy. Cakes and bread were made in the store's own bakery, and the broken biscuits counter was very popular. Working at Lewis's was like working in a little village. Hundreds of staff, and everyone knew each other. It was a sad time when the store was closing. There was a staff buyout, but shopping trends were changing with out-of-town shopping, etc. It was a great place and is still missed after 25 years by the staff and shoppers alike. Exceptional man of poetry and teaching. A poet, soldier and teacher from Leicestershire who was celebrated in America but relatively unknown in his home country is the subject of a new book. Author Professor Geoffrey Knight is hoping his complete and original biography of Arthur Newbery Choice will bring deserved recognition for a man he describes as an exceptional English poet of the First World War. The life story begins in the village of Huggleskut, at the end of the 19th century, where Arthur Newbery Choice was born in 1893. Mr. Knight provides a description of the village around this time and shares his research into the Newbery and Choice families. Arthur's schooling at Huggleskut National School, where his love of literature and poetry was first nurtured, and the award of a scholarship to attend Market Bosworth Grammar School are explored in detail, along with his move into the teaching profession as a student teacher at Colville's Bridge Road School in 1910. He was to spend the next 20 years teaching at Bridge Road, with only his war service and time spent training to become a certified teacher taking him away from his duties. In 1932, an interesting swap of roles saw the headmaster of Snibston Council School take over as head at Bridge Road, and Arthur, by then the principal teacher there, take over the vacant headship at Snibston. He remained there as headmaster until his death in 1937. Arthur's war service and his trip to America, where he enchanted huge audiences with his poetry and narrative skills, are considered in fascinating detail, along with an in-depth look at his poems and prose. Mr. Knight said, "Arthur Newbery Choice was an exceptional man, a man of fortitude and courage on the battlefield when wounded, a leader of men, Leicestershire's foremost poet. He was a brilliant teacher, loved by his pupils and colleagues alike. Moreover, he excelled in every facet of his fascinating life. The life, times and poetry of Arthur Newbery Choice, written by Geoffrey Knight and published by Colville Heritage Society, is available direct from the author, priced at £5. Telephone or text 07979-005-101. I'll repeat that, 07979-005-101. And now for a selection of letters. John Hanley of Wigston Magna says, "Birch so caring and will help charity challenge. On December the 14th, I had the privilege and honour to meet one of my footballing heroes, the great Alan Birchenall, when he was doing his rounds at Loros. It is true what people say about him. He is such a lovely, caring fella. He spent time chatting with me at length because he had been told that I lost my beautiful wife, Shirl, recently. Alan didn't hesitate when asked if he would autograph an ink sketch I did of the King Power Stadium so that I can auction the original and have prints produced to raise more funds for Loros this year, after raising £3,500 last year after doing a skydive. This time around, in September, I'm doing a wing walk, and, along with the help I have received from Alan, I'm hoping to surpass the total from last year. Hoping to acquire Jamie Vardy's autograph, which I know would go a long way towards helping my fundraising this time around." Trevor Cross of Leicester writes, "Fan just stating a fact, with confiscated sign. Please try to answer this question for me. Why the earth did that Stuart, pictured in the Mercury on January the 14th, confiscate that supporter's sign saying, 'Pool out'? What right has that steward to do such a thing, even before the game, too? You don't see stewards taking signs saying, 'I want your shirt,' do you? I was absolutely flabbergasted that happened. If I was holding, or if anyone was holding, an abusive sign, yes, probably, then take it away. But for stating a fact about what should be happening anyway before we hit rock bottom again, pull out, he must go. Not good enough." B. Hens of Leicester writes, "Bid to stop driving's fatal flaw not effective. Deterring drink driving, it does not seem the ongoing campaign is having an effect, with many drivers letting their guard down and failing to take on board that alcohol and driving is a lethal concoction. Then there is a situation of absent-mindedness relating to a forget-me-not to belt up, the urge to use mobile phones in transit and the obliviousness regarding the speed limit. To suppress those four offences would neutralise carnage on the highways. It may be a case of taking the bull by the horns with stern measures. Unfortunately, impetuous drivers will continue to flaunt these safety rules. Rebecca Ashman, PDSA Veterinary Campaigns Manager, writes, "Thanks for Lotto help in helping poorly pets. On behalf of vet charity PDSA, which has a busy pet hospital in Braunston, I'd like to say a huge thank you to all players of People's Postcode Lottery. We have received fantastic support from players over the past 12 months, which coincided with our 100th birthday celebrations. It was on November 17, 1917, that the charity's founder, Maria Dickin, first set up a dispensary for sick animals in London's East End. Over the following years, our work spread in response to public demand, and PDSA now operates 48 pet hospitals across the UK, supported by a national chain of around 120 charity shops and a dedicated army of volunteers. Over the past 12 months, support from players of People's Postcode Lottery has helped us deliver projects that prevent illness and disease and educate pet owners and children on how to care for their animals. In 2018, we educated more than 64,000 school children through our Petwise Schools programme, which promotes animal welfare, launched our £250,000 Petwise mobile unit, which features two vet consulting rooms, oxygen facilities, movable seating, a widescreen TV and built-in iPads, and can be used to carry out minor operations, host vaccination clinics, school lessons and pet first aid classes. Carried out over 5,000 free Petwise MOTs on pets through our Petwise tour across 151 locations. Microchipped 436 pets and clipped the nails of over 850 pets on board our three Petwise vehicles. Equipped 838 pet owners and visitors with general pet health advice through our Petwise tour. Completed 331 school visits, equipping the next generation of pet owners with the skills they need to provide the five welfare needs for pets to be healthy and happy. But there is still more to be done. In 2019, thanks to continued player support, we will be building on the legacy of these projects to continue to reach communities beyond the reach of our pet hospitals. In 2018 alone, £116 million was raised for good causes across Great Britain by players of People's Postcode Lottery. An incredible achievement. On behalf of us here at PDSA and all the pets we help, a huge thank you. Leaving EU will mean more goods for less. All scaremongering about goods being in short supply after Brexit is nonsense. Everything you buy from the EU can be bought from the UK or from the 93% of the world which is outside of the EU. A statement from government lawyers on March 4, 2017 said, Brexit. UK could quit the European Union without paying £39 billion. Leaving the EU will allow Britain to abolish all taxes and tariffs on non-EU imports like oranges, rice, coffee, Aussie wine and 12,000 plus other products. This will reduce prices and make the public better off. The public are not stupid. They will not tolerate staying in the EU via the back door or by any other means. Honour the referendum. Name and address supplied.
We apologise for any background noise that may have occurred. We have now reached the end of the Leicester Mercury Talking newspaper. If you wish to contact the Sound Services Department of Vista, please telephone the Vista helpline on 0116 249 8839. Goodbye!